Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grave and Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Paola, and I am an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of March. I'm going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others to achieve sobriety, help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grave and Open Meeting every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on agraven.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. This is today's Graven Daily Quote. The amount of reality I turn my back on is the amount I lose. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at agraven.org, or you will find it on the Graven app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Graven magazine. The March issue featured section is A and the Family. And the story is When Life Goes Down. Membership in AA doesn't mean I will have a life free of trials and tribulations. But what it does give me is a new approach and a new faith to deal with life. What the program gives me is a fellowship on which I can rely for help. What the program gives me is a faith in a higher power that sustains and conforms me. It lets me know that God will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Let's start today with a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is from chapter 11, A Vision for You. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I am willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and bland, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will be find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? So, this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure. We often hear it's best to try and identify with the speaker rather than compare your story with theirs. So I'm really excited to introduce my first speaker. I met Corina through service, and I've always admired her love and dedication to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned so much from her over the years. Corina, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much, Paola. Hi, everybody. My name is Corina. I'm an alcoholic. And Paola, thank you so much for asking me to speak. As nervous as I am about speaking today, I just have so much admiration and respect for you that I would say yes, of course, and then figure out later the rest of it. So I want to just tell my story in a general way. My sobriety date is July 6th of 2013. My home group is the Fifth Tradition Group in Shokan, New York. If you're ever up in the Catskills, come on over. And I have, you know, had the opportunity to go through the steps with a sponsor, and the amazing gift of being able to work with others and help them go through the steps and give back a little bit of what was so freely given to me. And so, you know, as far as like, you know, what it was like, I drank probably for about 10 years, the way I wanted to, which was around the time I started college. I got sober at 26. And I'll say that before that, I grew up in a home where there was sort of a lot of the rumor of alcoholism from my family tree, you know, and the wreckage of ancestors past, and also just a couple of uncles that struggled with alcoholism. And so there was always this sense of, you know, don't drink, just don't drink. Why do it? It's better to just do anything else. I grew up in, I'm from Costa Rica. I grew up in Long Island, and there was definitely a sense of apartness, because, you know, when I started really having an idea that I, you know, the ism started in my mental obsession, I didn't see anyone else like me and my family. You know, it really just seemed like only my uncles were, you know, drinking and going to jail and getting bailed out and crashing their motorcycle, you know. So I really identify when I've heard people in meetings say, like, I just didn't feel like I had a rule book for life. I felt like I didn't quite fit in to what was expected for me. And at some point it was like, well, I guess we're just going to go on a different path, right? And I will tell you, you know, just generally for me, my experience has been that whenever I have tried to drink the way that I want to, and the way that, you know, like, I have just not had any rules around it or tried to limit it in any way, those times in my life, the bottom has almost like fallen out from under. And I relate a lot, you know, to our high tolerance for pain, where, you know, when those situations and kind of like small disasters would happen, I would get back up hungover and be like, well, I'm never doing that again. And then, you know, within a few weeks or months, it just, the alcoholism would show up in with a different face, right? And I'd be like, oh, okay, this is a different thing. And it was always alcoholism. I experienced, you know, a lot of, during that time, there was a search for a higher power, but there was sort of a reticence to, like, sort of, you know, consider my drinking as part of the problem. So I wanted to be able to have a relationship with God, but then also drink the way I wanted to. And it just, the math does not add up for me. As a result of that, I projected a lot of that frustration on my relationship with a higher power. So I was frustrated a lot. I was angry. I was hopeless. I was, you know, feeling that I had this tremendous pressure to try to figure out how to drink the right way and do all of the things that my family wanted me of me and be happy and be successful and an upright citizen of the world. But then I couldn't, like, the bottom line is like, I could not. And so, when I had started college, it was with the idea of working in, you know, like, humanitarian work and traveling the world and writing books and sort of, you know, all these ideas. And, you know, by the end of my drinking, I had a job in Manhattan that was like this boss that would yell a lot. And I was hungover a lot and I was very unhappy. And I certainly wasn't traveling. I was, you know, I just kind of spent all of my money drinking, honestly. And I I had, other isms that showed up at that time is that I was afraid of, a lot of things, like all of this sort of like self-centered fear, and I wasn't realizing that my life was getting smaller and smaller and smaller, to the point that, I rented a room in about an hour away from the city, and I, had a couple friends maybe that from when I grew up, but that was it. I really would go to bars and talk to people for camaraderie, right? And we would sing whatever was playing on the jukebox. But that was really my point of connection, other than, people I would be friends with at work. And even then, those people started to see the way I would black out and things like that. And, holiday parties became more and more contentious. So those relationships too were like, oh, maybe she's not okay. And so I came in, and I had a friend who I used to drink with. She brought me to my first meeting. I sort of hadn't I didn't have a plan for that. I didn't know that's what I needed, but at the same time, when she asked me, like, hey, do you want to come to an AA meeting with me? I didn't say no. I was like, I didn't have words for what that was answering for me. So I went to my first meeting, and then what's funny is, like, for her, she has a couple of years sober still, more than me. I don't know if I said that right, but you guys get what I mean. And I've only seen her a handful of times, but she brought me to my first meeting. She knew sort of, where I was at in my last bottom. And from there on, AA has kind of enveloped me, right? And just kind of taken my hand. I would say that for me, my recovery has centered a lot around trust. I came in, and I had one way of doing running my life, right, which was reacting the same way to different situations with the same result. And I was presented with the idea of having a sponsor to run my great ideas by, and then being open to getting a suggestion that was different from whatever my idea was. And that was really hard. That was really hard at the beginning. I was frustrated, but I kept showing up. I would get annoyed at my sponsor, but I kept calling her. I was sort of just like, oh, can you believe this? But I would go to meetings. I would do my 90 and 90. I would go to my service commitment, or I would get it covered if I couldn't go, but I would still run those reasons why I couldn't go by my sponsor. And it was incredibly uncomfortable. But I think that, and hearing other stories, going to all of those meetings and hearing everybody's experiences, I really resonated with the idea of, like, maybe this could work for me. And so I trusted AA, even if I didn't always trust the individual members, right? Like, I struggled with building a relationship with my sponsor, but I trusted that AA worked. So I would do these actions, and just try to build my life in a different way. I really believe that it was important for me, before I was willing to not be in denial and really accept that my ideas didn't work, I needed to know that there was a solution. Otherwise, it almost felt like letting go of the ledge without a safety net to be below me. That is how I felt at the time. It was this hopelessness, but at the same time, I didn't want to die. So that was clear, and hearing people's experience, and seeing my friends get through the steps and start sponsoring, and seeing their lives turn around even when I couldn't see mine. I really felt like this was a safe place for me, and that has been important for me to try to give that back and create that environment for others, as I continue to be a member of the fellowship. So, as far as my relationship with my higher power, I'll say that it's changed a lot. It's really has sort of been a lot of replacing contempt with curiosity. That the fourth step was huge with that. And just being able to have a simple but consistent approach to checking in with my higher power. So, whether there's prayers or practices or specific things I might bring to my higher power that either I'm struggling with or I don't know the answer to, at the very bottom line of it all, like my first cup of coffee is with my higher power right in the day. And whatever comes of that, whatever that turns into that first moment in my day, I let it happen because, I will say, like in the course of my sobriety, my life has gotten so much bigger. And when I was first checking in with my sponsor every day, I was really nervous of like, how am I supposed to run every single decision by her? And like, what if I do the wrong thing? And what if I mess up? And what if I, and that anxiety really has been replaced by the idea that like, I'm able to apply the same principles to everything, right? So instead of having the common thread of my decisions being alcoholism, I get to invite something else and pause and sort of have that open mind where I can just follow today. I can follow my higher power and I get to do inventory and talk to other alcoholics just to make sure it is my higher power. Because sometimes I'll have great ideas and then, I run it by a friend or my sponsor and we're like, okay, maybe not. We're not gonna move to South America today over resentment. So I appreciate the gifts today and I wanna say, I want to be in a place whenever I can to appreciate the gift of fellowship. I was somebody that, like I mentioned, I would just wander kind of in the streets of Manhattan and not really have any friends. And I used to look in the windows and see these tables of people having dinner parties and be like, wow, that would be so nice. How do you do that? How do you get friends? And I just have to say, like, I pinch myself sometimes. I'll just be a fellowship and remind myself of how lucky we are that, like, at any point, like, I have this access to others, and so that I don't have to walk through anything alone. There's this really, funny story where I was at an AA event some time ago, and I was having dinner with a couple of fellows, and this one gentleman, his name was Jim, and he's a truck driver. And we were all talking, and then all of a sudden the sun was shining through, and it was sort of like blind, it's like it's hitting you in the face. And he put his hands up, and he was this big guy. He puts his hands up to block the sun from my eyes so that we could continue all to share. And he did that for like a few minutes, and I was struck so much by the kindness of that, where it just softened my heart. And there's so many examples of that where I just think about the people in the fellowship that have melted the icy structures. Like I believe in kindness and respect and compassion today because of all of the people that make up, the fellowship that comes to mind when I think of it, right? If you ask me, what is the fellowship of AA? It's all of these different wonderful people, and that we get to all do this together. I think that's where I'll leave it today. I just want to say, thank you for the opportunity to just see like what's possible, and just and everybody sharing our experiences to be able to give hope. So, if you're listening and find what you need for today, That's awesome. And if not, then keep coming back. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Karina, so much. That was so wonderful, so inspiring. I can relate with what you said with that rule book for life that I didn't have either. And I felt so lost most of my life, really, until I got sober. And also when you mentioned the fear, the self-centered fear, I was thinking about how we are driven by 100 forms of fears. And I also appreciate what you shared about the relationship, building that relationship with a sponsor and that trust. And it was hard for me too, and but I was willing, as the dying can be. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you so much for being here. And now I'm going to make some announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, where money and spirituality mix. You can find it on AA.org. Graven does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Graven is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting agraven.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for A. Graven on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Graven books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Graven and your local office. You can also visit the Graven online store at agraven.org. The A. Graven Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit agraven.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcasts, the A. Graven Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on agraven.org. Please follow Graven on Instagram and YouTube too. The new season of Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous, launches March 17th. Season 2 takes listeners on a journey across the fellowship, celebrating milestones, exploring how AA reaches anyone, anywhere, and share stories that highlight the impact of service, self-support, and recovery in action. Tune in to hear how AA's messages continue to reach those who need it most. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch every episode of the upcoming season. And now I'm going to introduce our second guest from today. We are going to hear from Matthew. I also met Matthew through service. His love and passion for Alcoholics Anonymous are truly inspiring. I remember, Matthew, our last Hispanic event we attended, I was really touched to see how much the Latino community loves him, loves you, and connects with you, even with the language barrier. You really speak the language of the heart, Matthew. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Paola. And thank you, Karina, for your story. My name is Matthew, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to start my time.
Hi.
Hey, so I reside in Northern California. I'm a part of California Northern Interior Area 7. I'm a past delegate from Panel 74-75. I served on the Grapevine Lavinia Committee, Conference Committee. And so that's another opportunity I got to spend with time with you guys at the Grapevine. You know, I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps with that sponsor and the traditions, and we've studied in the concepts all the time together. And I sponsor other men. Currently, I got a young guy. It's 22 out of the Wacky Paw, the Western Area Young People's Committee. And boy, my phone blows up on a daily basis. It's just an opportunity for growth for me, too. Just have to share that. Be careful what you ask for. But, you know, my story, I'll just say that I was a normal household growing up. My father was an alcoholic, but my mother was a normie. And I idolized my dad, so I grew up just like my dad. I graduated high school, you know, and in high school we had kegger parties and we did the normal teenage things. But I ended up in a college north of where we're at Chico State in 1987 when I enrolled there. It was the number one party school by this certain magazine that everybody used to look at. And anyway, what I can tell you is we had a reputation to live up to, and I became a daily drinker. And I really poured it on for the next 5.5 years. And I ended up, finally graduated, had a couple scrapes, you know, but I changed my major and all. But I got out and ended up getting me a teaching credential, and I became a junior high school teacher in a school near Sacramento. And there I found a whole new group of people to drink with after work. Oh, my gosh. And it was best time when I after, you know, Friday after work, it'd be like 9:30 and I'd look around and everybody's gone and I'm still there. And by this time, I found my way into outside issues. And so the party was on, you know. I found I took a hostage, as I like to say, and got married. And that, you know, lasted about 8 months, and our alcoholism really took over. We had some disagreements, but I'll just cut that short by saying we separated. And soon after, I got hurt on the job. I got hit in the face with a golf ball. I was teaching PE on the playground, and one of the kids hit a ball when he wasn't supposed to, and it hit me right in the face, knocked out my teeth, and gave me a concussion. So I had some time off work with a workers' comp claim and recovering from plastic surgery on my nose and my split lip. I still keep a mustache, so you can't see my lip. But during that time is when my alcoholism and my outside issues really accelerated, you know. And they told me I had my job when I came back the following year. And it was August, and I went back to my union rep, and I just told him there's no way I can come in the classroom. I'm a mess. And I resigned my position. And that's when my life, you know, I thought I had it made. I took my 401k, the money I had saved up for that 8 years I taught school, and I bought a travel trailer, and I was going to travel all over the United States and hit all the national parks. But the furthest I ever got was this man-made lake just west of town. And there's where I did a lot of drinking. Anyway, I started running into problems. It was a lot of fun, but then there was fun with problems. And I got picked up on three different DUIs, in possession of controlled substances. You know, the list goes on. And I was out on bail, and I had a court date the following day, and that was August the 24th of the year 2000. It was the last day I drank. And I was sunburned, and I remember it had been a long day of drinking out on the river, and I made my way to my connection's house, and I got my prescription filled, and I told everybody, I'll be back tomorrow, you know, I got this court thing, and I'll be back, because they kept continuing my case. And when I got to court that day, on August the 25th, the judge there saw right through my whole sob story and said, you know, let's remand him into custody while we can sort all this out. And so that's like literally my sobriety birthday. And I celebrate that. I take a chip and a cake every year on that day. And I was inside the Placer County Jail here in Placer County. And Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., the Hospitals and Institutions Committee would bring a meeting in. That's our corrections committee here in Northern California. And they bring a meeting. And, you know, I started attending those meetings, and I didn't think I had a problem at all with alcohol or drugs. And I was innocent of all this charges and everything I had going on, you know. But they kept coming. I kept going. And they, you know, those people convinced me that when I got out, there were meetings I could go to. And they gave me just a little bit of hope. And I really needed that, because I was in some desperate times. Needless to say, I was sentenced to 5 years in the state penitentiary after my court was all over with. And I ended up in one of the largest penitentiaries in the state of California. And there I continued to go to meetings. And one night, after hearing someone share their story, a person from the outside that came in to share, I had a spiritual awakening. and moment of clarity, like all this is my fault. And oh my gosh, don't you know how bad I feel about this and the guilt and the shame and, the remorse. And I made a promise to my higher power and myself that I was going to, from that day forward, I was going to change. I wasn't going to go back to my old ways and that I was going to make every day count. And I was going to do everything I could to make myself better. You know, I paroled, I got out, I got my little gift card, we call it, the little signature. I had to get two of those and test with my parole officer and go to two AA meetings a week. And I went to a meeting in the next town over from where I was residing at my mom's house. And I ended up, I got through that in 12 months and I got off paper. I tested clean every time. I jumped through all the hoops that they had and I was so grateful to get off paper. And then I finally, at my home group, I'd been working the steps when I was inside off the window shades that were hanging on the wall. And the guy at my home group, he spoke up one night and he says, well, yeah, you've been working them right off the wall. You have an off the wall program. He says, you need to get in the book. And I'm like, okay. And he said, come to my house Thursday evening, 6 o'clock at my kitchen table. And that's where I started working the steps right out of the book, fourth edition. And, understanding my higher power and the third step, making a decision. I was all in on this whole program. I've been attending one foot in, one foot out, but now I was in I knew that this was where I needed to be. I ended up, that fourth and fifth step really helped me with the shame and the guilt that I was carrying around and the weight that I was on my shoulders, and it lightened me up. I got through all my 12 steps and in the middle of that, I started sponsoring guys, and I could never keep anybody sober. I sure tried, though. Boy, I ran them all around town. But a long story short is I ended up finally getting a guy through all 12 of his steps. And that's when my sponsor told me that you've consummated your 12th step. Now it's your job to continue to go on and help others. And so successfully, I've done that quite a few times. I can count maybe like 20, 22 times. I'm currently working with four, I think I said. Anyway, after 4 or 5 years of that, I started getting kind of bored. I was doing the 12-step meeting, the 12-step hotline, but I thought there was more to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I raised my hand one night at a meeting to be the general service representative. And I got really involved in general service. I became a DCM after my GSR. And then our district needed some help. And so a couple of us got together and we started a public information committee, a bridging the gap committee. We started doing some things. And it was, I stood at the area I wanted to be an area officer. That's where what happens when you're a DCM. And I only got like two votes in that, but I remember being so rejected. And then the area chair came to me and said, hey, we need a bridging the gap chair. Would you be willing to take that position? It's an appointed chair. And I said, sure. And so I took the skills that I had learned in my district on helping how to build a district bridging the gap chair. If you don't know what bridging the gap is, it's a temporary contact with people coming out of treatment or corrections, take them or get them to a meeting in their first 24 hours and stick with them for like three meetings, like a temporary guide through Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I went up and down Northern California helping create and start committees and helping the other ones get going. And that was a big thing. And I went to the National Bridging the Gap Workshop Weekend. Actually, it's a national event. You can find there. It's BTGWW, their website. And they're part of Alcoholics Anonymous all over the United States and Canada that do the same thing. And I learned so much at their conference. It's a weekend thing every year. And I got on their committee. And 4 years later, I was the chair. I was the one in charge of the weekend. And at the same time, I was elected to area office in my area. I was wearing two hats. But anyway, I remember my last Bridge the Gap was chair. I was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I had a connection with with the staff member that had visited there. And when they got back, I don't know for a fact, but they talked to Jonathan, who is our senior editor of the Grapevine magazine, but they told him about my story. And I got this phone call and he says, "Hey, Matthew, we would like you to write your story for our upcoming Bridging the Gap Grapevine magazine. And I want to show you." Whoa, there is my story in print. This is April of 2018. It's a Grapevine magazine. And that's me. That's my story. Get a little emotional there because, you know, hey, I'm in print, don't you know? And I would say I kept going with General Service. I found myself being elected as delegate, and the committee I got picked out of the hat or whatever, how they do it, I don't know. But I was put on the Grapevine committee, and that was just awesome to represent my area and to be on the Grapevine, something really near and dear to my heart. You know, when I was on the inside, that was the one magazine that we got monthly that everybody got to share and pass around, you know, and that was something that I really looked forward to. And here I am, you know, 25 years later, still reading the magazine and participating in Grapevine meetings. Today, now that I've rotated out of my position, it's such a relief. Let me tell you, it feels so good to just go to meetings and be a normal AA member and have all this experience and have met all these beautiful people and, you know, the relationships. And I believe every conversation counts, but it's about relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've met so many beautiful people and it's changed my life. I really feel that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a second chance. With a couple minutes I have left, I have to tell you the rest of my story real quick. And that is what something I didn't talk about was my best friend. He was also my crime partner back when I was out there making a mess of my life. It was on his testimony that I was convicted of my five felonies. And I got the state penitentiary, but in return for his testimony, he got a stipend of money, a place to live, and some mental health and health treatment. My understanding was electroshock therapy, but he was a mess too. But, you know, you can say that I held a resentment towards that person the whole time I was inside. And when I got out, you know, the first thing I wanted to do was find him and teach him a lesson. And I was adamant about that, and I didn't tell anybody about that, including my wife and my sponsor. And I went looking for him, and I didn't tell again. I never did find him though. I looked for him, and 15 years go by, and I'm coming out of a meeting, and I stop at a gas station near the freeway, and I'm getting gas, and I look at this homeless person that's organizing the trash in the bay next to me. And I got in my truck after finishing, and I was looking at this fella's face was overgrown. His hair's all overgrown. He's living in the bush, you know, and it was my friend. And I thought, this is really weird. I don't feel like getting out and beating him up. You know, this doesn't seem appropriate at this moment. And besides, the program had changed my heart so much. I didn't know what to do. So I left. And I'm driving home and I call my sponsor and I tell him, "Hey, you know, my friend Ken here, he's the one that testified against me at my trial, blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Wow, I've never heard of this guy, Ken." Yeah. And I said, "Yeah, I know. I've never told anybody about this. I've held on to this secret for a long time. And here it is." And he's like, "Well, you need to come to my house and we need to work a fourth and fifth on this tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. So you need to be here." And sure enough, that's what I did. And my whole thing is that what came about of that whole process was that I was to pray for him until I could forgive him. And, you know, I started in on that process and I ended up about 2.5 months later, still thinking about my friend Ken and thinking on positive notes. I asked God in a prayer as I was driving home one night that I would like some clarity with this situation with my friend Ken, because, you know, you know, I don't hold a resentment. I don't think that much anymore to him. But be careful what you ask for, because I pulled into a different gas station just up the street, and I parked and I was filling up, and there comes my friend walking through the parking lot, and I'm yelling, "Hey, Ken, over here!" You know, and he comes over to me, and I'm like, "How you doing?" You know, "It's Matthew." And he's like, "Oh," you know, and he was really freaked out. I know he didn't really want to talk to me at that point. And I held our conversation as best I could. I asked him how he was doing, which was still wearing the same clothes, homeless. He was a mess. And I had my new truck and my business, and I'm thriving. I'm married. I got a house. I got all this stuff going on. And then I asked him, and then long story, I get to a point where I'm like, I realize he wants to go. And I said, "Before you leave, I just need to say one thing. I need to let you know how much I appreciate. I thank you for what you did for me, because what you did, you saved my life. You did what a friend would do for another friend. You told the truth, you know." And we parted our ways. And before the pandemic, I used to see him walk in the streets still of our town. But I haven't seen him since, and it's been a sad situation. But when I did see him, I'd get out, give him a hug, and try to help him out. But, you know, the lesson I learned was praying for my friend, I was able to forgive him. But in reality, the biggest thing was I was able to forgive myself for holding on to such a resentment for so long. And it says that we waste the time that we could be of service to others. We squander the moments, is what our book says. And what I can tell you is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous offers you this same opportunity for you to share with another alcoholic if you're holding on to something that you haven't shared with your sponsor. And I know I'm over time, and I want to say thank you for this opportunity. I'm not over time. That's okay. I just want to wrap it up by saying Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a second chance, as I said, to right my wrongs and to put my life back together. And today I have a host of friends beyond measure. And I understand truly what it means to be happy, joyous, and free. Thank you for this opportunity.
Wow, Matthew, thank you so much for your wonderful story. I was thinking when you share about that story or the hope that you found by listening to stories or hearing at meetings, I remember one of the stories I heard new, and I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. And that story really impacted me in a way that I knew that, yes, I had these two and I had to make a decision. It was really such a powerful moment. And then I'm grateful that you did all about bridging the gap. That's so wonderful. And I didn't know your story was published on the Grapevine. That's wonderful. That's awesome. Thank you so much for being here, for everything that you do. And thank you, Karina, also for being here. I'm going to read something else right now. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with a professional community or public information work. Karina, can you please close us in prayer?
Hi, so thank you both for a wonderful meeting, and we'll take a moment to reflect in gratitude for a wonderful fellowship, and close with the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom
to know the difference.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Karina, Matthew.
Thank you.
See you very soon.
All right.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.